okay? And the Cas is CRISPR associated for Cas. That's CRISPR Cas. Okay, what this system is, again, this is something that occurs in bacteria. This is an adaptive immune system in bacteria. When bacteria are infected either by a virus or, say, a plasmid sequence comes in through conjugation, this system has these nucleases which will go and cleave the DNA up into short pieces, and it looks for sequences called the PAM, or proto-spacer adjacent motif. And this is basically in the system I'll talk about today is NGG. So when these nucleases find in this infecting sequence NGG, it will clip up a little short piece of DNA and then insert it into this CRISPR array. So there's these palindromic repeat sequences in there, and these short pieces of pathogen DNA are inserted in there. If you go into bacteria that have this, and I'll be talking about strep pyogenes mostly, if you look at their CRISPR array, it kind of gives you a natural history of all their previous viral infections or plasmid, conjugations. It's a pretty interesting system. So that's basically the immunization part of this assay. So it's got nucleases that cleave up the foreign DNA, insert it into this CRISPR locus. Now, the next time they get infected by the same virus or another virus, they express this locus. They make a precursor RNA that then gets processed and cleaved up by some of these other Cas nucleases into these short CRISPR RNA. Okay, so in this CRISPR RNA, those colored boxes are the short, and this is, say, a 20 nucleotide sequence that's complementary to the invading pathogen. Okay, so this short sequence now can hybridize to the incoming DNA, by Watson-Crick base pairing, and as long as that's upstream of that PAM sequence, then another endonuclease will come and cleave it. That's the Cas9 part of the CRISPR. So the Cas9 endonuclease will come, find this sequence, and cut it. Now there's a third player in this, and that's called the tracker RNA, and that's a second RNA molecule that kind of stabilizes the interaction between the Cas9 and the CRISPR RNA. So the tracker stands for transacting CRISPR RNA. Those three things are involved. You have the short CRISPR RNA, a tracker RNA, and the Cas9. They can all come together, and then they can chop up this invading pathogen's DNA. Okay. Now, to make this useful for mammalian cells, we didn't want this three-piece system. So some very clever investigators combined the CRISPR RNA with this tracker RNA. And so here's the tracker RNA, and it's a shortened version of it, combined with the CRISPR RNA. So this is just 20 nucleotides. And this whole thing together is sometimes called a single guide RNA. Or sometimes it'll just be guide RNA, single guide RNA. I'll call it single guide RNA for the rest of the talk. And so here it's shown this single guide RNA interacting through Watson-Crick base pairing with its target sequence here. And again, so this target sequence, it's 20 nucleotides. It's be 5 prime to 3 prime, 5 prime to 3 prime, followed by an NGG. So that's the PAM. The PAM is in the DNA. The PAM is not in your CRISPR RNA, okay? So when you make a CRISPR with this sequence, this is the sequence here, the T's are now U's. It'll, through Watson-Crick base pairing, hybridize with this. The tracker helps guide. This big blob here is Cas9. Cas9 will come and sit on the tracker RNA. And there are two nuclease domains here, these two oval boxes here, and you'll get a cleavage of the DNA just upstream of the NGG here on both strands, resulting in giving you your double strand break. Any questions so far? Yes.
It sounds vaguely like siRNA. Is there any known relationship, like evolutionarily, or like just DNA targeted?
So all cells have, you know, these systems for for chopping up and cleaving the short RNA molecules. So there's all kinds of nucleases. And so I don't know, you know, if there's any, you know, homology with these Cas nucleases and siRNA nucleases or not. I'm sure people are studying that.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
So can you make a CRISPR for RNA targeting?
You know, I don't know if the answer to that one either. So there's all so I'm going to focus the talk on strep pyogenes and its system, but there are lots. You know, every bacteria has a different system potentially. They have different PAMs. So I'll be focusing on an NGG. Other systems, you know, those bases will be different. Sometimes it's it can look a little more random. Sometimes it's a longer sequence. So as all these systems get developed and optimized, you know, they'll be, the systems, it's just going to keep getting better and better and better. I don't know about it, you know, for RNA. Okay, the way we use this in the lab, and these plasmids are available through AdGene. So is everyone familiar with the website AdGene? They just provide plasmids that people use from different papers, and you can go there, and it's very cheap. You know, you can buy one of these plasmids that people have reported. They had to add a whole section to their website just for the CRISPR-Cas9 technology. There's so many plasmids available that do different things. And I'm just going to show you an example of one and how we use it in the laboratory. Basically, we express this single guide RNA from a, so again, this is a small RNA. It's only 100 nucleotides. We express it off an RNA pull-3 promoter, of the U6 promoter. It's a small nuclear RNA gene. And we have in our vector, so it's got a selection cassette, but it's got this U6 promoter, and we just clone in, so we've modified the AdGene vector so that we can very easily cut this open with four base pair overhangs. We order two oligos with similar four base pair overhangs. We anneal them and then ligate them into the vector, and we've incorporated our 20 nucleotide target into the with the tracker RNA to give us our single guide RNA. So it's, you know, so we have a cut vector, we order two oligos, pop it in, and we're ready to go. So that's the guide RNA part of this. And then the human Cas9, so there's a human codon-optimized Cas9 nuclease that's also in a plasmid. And so having these two plasmid reagents, and there's other, you know, there are other people that put these two plasmids together, so you've got a single molecule. And now you can, you know, transfect these into your cells of interest. And this, you know, target sequence will find its, so here's the target in your guide RNA, will find the DNA, and you'll get cleavage upstream of the PAM. Now, people have also used these, instead of using plasmid DNA constructs, they've just used RNAs to make things like new transgenic knockouts in the mouse model. So here's a fertilized mouse embryo, and so people have done this with ZFNs and TALENs, but they're also doing it with sgRNAs, and again, these are just in vitro transcribed single guide RNAs with a in vitro transcribed messenger RNA for Cas9. So you're just injecting RNA. There's no DNA involved, so you're not going to have these plasmids running around in your new transgenic animal. So you inject the single guide RNA, messenger RNA for Cas9 into fertilized mouse embryo and make mice. So an early paper from the Janisch group, a one-step generation of mice carrying mutations in multiple genes by CRISPR-Cas9-mediated genome engineering. In this paper, they knocked out five genes in one injection in the embryo. Actually, they did it in three different ways. They tested these things in ES cells first and showed they can pick individual ESL colonies that, and they just examined them for their target genes and saw that they were able to knock out up to seven genes in a single cell. So two of these genes were on the Y chromosome, so they were single copies. This is a male ESL line. And three of the genes, the TET1, 2, 3, they knocked out both alleles in a high percentage of the ESLs that they identified. They were also able to inject the RNAs directly into embryos, and through non-homologous end-joining of the double-strand breaks that occurred in the developing mice, they were able to find mice with knockouts of these, either individual or double knockout animals. And they were also able to show that they could do homology-directed repair, HDR, by using RNAs again with DNA oligos. So single-stranded DNA oligo for their homology, and they were able to incorporate new restriction sites into these genes, which made it easy to analyze the result. So just quickly showing you some of the data from this paper, there are two main ways there's three main ways that people follow the activity of these reagents in their experiments. Two of them are shown here. The third one is next-gen sequencing, which I'll show some examples of in a moment. But the first one is using the Surveyor assay, which uses the enzyme Cell1, which was isolated from celery, and hence the name Cell1. And this is an endonuclease that cleaves a heteroduplex. So if you have a mutant sequence and a wild-type sequence, you denature them, reanneal. Some of the wild-type sequence and mutant sequence will come together, and you'll have a little bubble there. And this cell one will find that bubble and cleave the DNA into two pieces. Okay. So in a cell one assay, after they've injected their agents into the ESLs, and then they have PCR primers to amplify that flank the site, their target sequence where they want to make their double strand break. So they use outside primers, amplify this region. This would be the starting band up here. So that's a full-size amplicon. And then when they treat them with cell one, they'll get cleavage. Again, so they have a plate of cells. They put these reagents in, so they have a population of cells. They use primers to amplify the genes. Some will be wild-type, some will be mutant. They denature, reanneal, treat with cell one. If you have any heteroduplex, it'll cut. And they can show that the percentage of non-homologous end joining. So 36% here, 48%, 36%. That was for three different experiments looking at TET1 gene alone, TET2 gene alone, TET3 gene alone. They also showed that they can make triple knockouts. And that's shown in this experiment. In this assay, this is the other way to analyze things. They made a restriction fragment length polymorphism assay. In this assay, they did their targeting, they chose their PAM, so it would be right where a restriction site occurs. So if they get cleaving there in an indel form, the restriction site is destroyed. So it no longer cuts. And these are some examples of ESLs that, it's the same three ESLs in each of these. So they had sgRNAs for all three of these genes. Transfected into ESLs, picked colonies, and these three were triple mutants. So when they did this PCR amplification and tried to cut with these enzymes, they didn't cut. Didn't cut, didn't cut. Here's where the wild type, when you cut it, cuts. It runs lower in the gel. So that's the RFLP assay. And then they went on, so they examined their, they basically did an experiment. They put sgRNAs in for five genes, picked ESLs. In this last experiment, and this is with this is with three genes. So they put three sgRNAs and the messenger RNA for Cas9. They picked 96 ESL colonies. They saw that in 55 of 96, none of the genes were mutated. So these didn't get their guide RNAs in. The cells probably weren't transfected. And then they analyze for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or all 6 copies of these genes deleted. And they found in 20 out of 96, all 3 genes had homozygous deletions. Those 6 mutant copies. And when they made mice, let's just focus on this lower table here, they combined when you knock out all 3 of these genes in a mouse, it's lethal. So they just knocked out 2 of them, TET1 and TET2. They knew from previous knockouts by traditional methods which ones would be lethal or not. So they combined TET1 and TET2. Again, this is RNA injected directly into a fertilized mouse embryo. Then they implant those embryos. So here's the... They injected 229 zygotes, 194 blastocysts developed. They transferred 144 of those into 7 recipients, and they had 31 newborn pups, 8 that were dead at birth. And then they examined in these, they examined in 28 of them, 28 of these mice, the number of alleles deleted, and they had all 4 mutant alleles in 22 of 28.
Wow.
It's hard to believe some of these numbers, but man, it's amazing the results.
How stable is that? How do you guarantee that's just going to be?
Well, you need to, once you do your in vitro transcription, you got to make sure you got product, and you just got to keep RNases away from it. And if you degrade your RNAs before they get in, they'll do nothing. Now I want to talk about some modifications that people have made to this technology to further improve it. Okay? So the basic technology, you got to